good evening, ladies and gentlemen. That's kind of how I feel tonight. Welcome to tonight's program here on The Molloy Show. As you can probably guess, we got a bunch of email about a couple of things. First of all, our removal to the late night slot on Sirius. And even more mail regarding the email I read last night from Diana in Florida, where she took me to the woodshed and really raised hell with me about my not endorsing Barack Obama. I'm not going to go back and read her letter, but I did want to share with you a couple of responses, just for the hell of it. This is from Jeanette. Well, tuned into the show tonight in my car. Again, last time it was a Robert, tonight it's Doris, or something with a D, Diana. I didn't hear the letter she wrote, but heard you say that she said you don't care as much about Molly as she does. That's about as insulting as it gets. I do hate Obama apologists more than repugnants. It's one thing if someone decides they have to vote for Barack Obama again because they really believe Romney and Ryan will be worse. That's okay with me, even though I disagree with them. Regarding whether Republicans will be worse, ask yourself if Barack Obama and his gang, don't leave out Monsanto, he and his gang have been better than the Bush crime family. My answer is no. On some issues, they've been worse. And all three branches of the federal government are already controlled by the right. I'm not crazy about their complete obliviousness, the Obama bots, to this record. But it's when they say other people have to vote for Obama, too, and they attack the intelligence and motives of those of us who can't do it again. Then I get pissed off. I won't send you the laundry list of why Obama's as bad or worse again. You know why, and I heard you list some reasons last night. But I will ask, because from what I heard, you say that she mentioned women, girls, and people of color. Well, here's a question. How many people of color, women and girls, has Obama militarily murdered? That's a good question. If what's-her-name would like a visual, send her the attached photo of Shakira, 4 years old. She's one of the lucky kids who survived an Obama drone attack. I couldn't verify whether the dead people I found pictures of were female, so I'm sending a picture of this little girl. Also attached is Christine Assange, also female, clearly distressed, holding photos of little Julian. I don't give a rat's ass how bad the other two guys are. I will not vote for this fascist, warmongering liar again. Okay. That's from Jeanette from Shirley in St. Paul, Minnesota. Bravo, Diane. You have expressed so well what I've been saying to the men I know who expressed the lack of willingness to vote for the Democratic slate of candidates. They're not pure enough. They all seem stunned that women's issues should be of concern when the important issue is the head of the party. It doesn't matter who is president. The corporatists determine our foreign policy. I can't change that. However, if Republicans aren't stopped, women and minorities will lose even more rights. Shirley in St. Paul. From Roz, isn't a vote a personal thing, Mike? Nobody's business but your own. Also, you're the furthest thing from a woman hater that I've ever known. If Diana doesn't know you by now, she will never know you. If you don't know me by now. That'd make a good song. Obviously, this coming election has her freaked out. From Cindy, regarding Diane from Florida, I kind of agree with her, but again, I am a woman. Do you realize mine was the first generation to be able to leave our abusive exes and take our kids with us? It's true. Children always went with the fathers before the 70s. That is a short time ago historically. I am going to vote for Obama again for one single reason. because the team he brings to the federal government is not Republican. The team isn't quite as crazy. They're just as greedy, but not as nuts. From Cindy. From David, Mike, I'm about a generation behind you, and like you, refuse to pick between two Republicans. We busted our ass in 2006 to get both houses of Congress flipped, and then a Democrat to the White House in 2008, only to see the leadership piss it away. I'm sorry, I cannot do it, and I will not. My home state is a lost cause in 2012, so I will vote for the Green Party to help them establish themselves as automatically qualifying on the ballot in future elections. From Richard in Santa Fe, subject line hope with a question mark. I agree with pretty much everything you've said about Barack Obama to date. He is a huge disappointment, but I will vote for him anyway. Mitt Romney scares the daylights out of me. If he gets into office, we are finished. I really believe that. I don't know whether the American people would turn out in large enough numbers to defeat the Republican electoral fraud effort, so I cannot consider voting for a third-party candidate or staying home on election day. I've got to hope my vote will count. Can there be some incredible national reform born out of middle-class sensibility, scared straight after a Mitt Romney presidency? I doubt it. I wouldn't even count on free elections continuing were Romney to take office. Maybe there could be such reform through taking control of the Democratic Party while Obama is in a second term. Yeah, I know it's pretty thin, but it's the only route I see to recovering this nation. Richard in Santa Fe. And finally, from Michael in Roswell, just listening to last night's podcast, I've been up for about 30 hours and fell asleep at the 10 p.m. mark. And this letter from your correspondent in Florida has kind of got me annoyed, too. The Democrats, for decades, have pretty much failed to follow through on their early moves toward a more egalitarian society. Women still don't receive equal pay. Effectively, on average, you're still making 77% of men. At the state level, reactionaries have been steadily chipping away at reproductive rights, and Democrats have done nothing to stem that tide, and in some ways have been aiding and abetting those efforts. The current administration has already signaled its willingness to, as they put it, modify Social Security and Medicare, and those so-called modifications will have the eventual effect of loss of benefits or loss of the programs themselves. And which segment of society is most dependent upon these programs in old age? Women, who outlive men by a significant measure. The Democratic Senate Committee and the Democratic Congressional Committee have consistently favored blue dog Democrats over progressives in national races. And those blue dogs vote with the Republicans almost as frequently as they vote with Democrats. The Democrats have reflexively moved to the right on a wide variety of issues, instead of doing the right thing for the constituents. They have embraced endless war and internal security measures that are to the detriment of all citizens, male and female, young and old. There are some people, such as your correspondent, Diana, who accept all these things as normal and think they are the result of Republican policies, but they are not normal, and they are as much Democratic policies as they are Republican. Much of what's rotten in this country is truly bipartisan. Michael in Roswell. So, some comments about the email from Diana in Florida last night, and I will leave it there, and we shall move on. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Have you heard this bit of audio or seen the tape of it's from Crooks and Liars, Paul Ryan making a fool, or attempting to, he only made a fool of himself, but trying to make a fool of a 71-year-old man forced to the ground by the police at a pay-to-play town hall meeting that Ryan had last fall. Ryan was discussing cutting senior Social Security and Medicare as a means of debt reduction. Never, ever, ever ask the wealthy in this United States ever to pay their fair share. And their fair share would be about 70% for people who whose incomes are over $5 million a year. Maybe 80%, but never, ever, ever ask these greedy, filthy bastards to pay their share. Cut Medicare, cut Social Security, cut temporary assistance to needy families, cut food stamps, cut Pell Grants, cut everything that you can, but stay away from the wealthy and their entitlements. That's what entitlements are, not food stamps. Anyway, Ryan was saying most of our debt in the future comes from our entitlement programs without realizing he was speaking the truth. And the entitlement programs are the breaks, the incredible breaks that the ultra wealthy like he and his running mate get in this country while the rest of us pay the carry the weight. So this older man, you can look at the video, he stands up and he says, "Hey," and of course Ryan continues to speak, "I paid into that for 50 years, my unemployment, my Social Security, my Medicare, and now you're gonna..." And at this point you hear the police who are dragging him out, shouting at him, "On the ground, on the ground." And then this wonderful Christian man, this great, adorable Eddie Munster freak, says, "I hope he's taking his blood pressure medication." And he and the room laugh.
"Most of our debt in the future comes from our entitlement programs.
Hey, what is this Medicare entitlement program? So, I paid into that for 50 years. My unemployment and my Social Security and my Medicare. And now you're going to..."
"So, I hope he's taking his blood pressure medication."
Isn't that nice? Huh? Isn't that nice? Make a joke about a 71-year-old guy standing there saying, "Listen, I paid into that for 50. Now, Ryan's answer would be, "Well, you dumbass, you haven't read my program. This doesn't affect anybody over the age of 55. That's not the issue, is it? The issue is that this punk-ass Ryan, this guy who, I don't care what his disavowals are now, but this guy who would have had sex with Ayn Rand if he could have had the chance, with this atheist, communist, half-witted author, and he now tries to disavow her. There he is. There he is, Howard Roark, standing there. "Hope he took his blood pressure medicine, you goddamn freeloader." That's your boy. You filthy Republicans, how dare you even put two clowns like this up? How dare you? Scum. We have another piece of sound in a bit. A statement that he made in 2011 on universal coverage, universal health coverage, and Medicare. And it's put out there by the editor, Mark, the editor of Buzzflash at Truthout. And the sound is out there. We're going to play it for you a little bit later. And the reason the sound is available is because Ryan is now trying to deny it. And Ryan, like all Republican office holders and office seekers, is a goddamn liar. He will say anything that his capitalist owners tell him to say. Anything. Boy, he's sure making Mitt Romney look like an empty-headed geek, isn't he? That's one thing you got to say for Paul Ryan. You know, he's a numbers wonk. He knows how to show those numbers, how the poor and the working class and the middle class in this country have just goddamn destroyed everything. You know, the poor with their insistence. They all walked into mortgage companies and held guns to the lender's head and said, "Give me the money!" Right? Isn't that what happened? And all these filthy freeloading poor people with kids who need food stamps, huh? Yeah. All right. We'll be right back. Is the damage you already done? Is that nauseating stream of words really dripping from your tongue? A sleepless night. Can I introduce a catheter? Siphon up your life. Talk radio, I love you. Be your vulnerability. You're a hideous reminder of how this country is. Talk radio, I love you. Be your vulnerability.
Substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. Oh, by the way, one of our listeners, I don't know who he or she is because there's no name. I'll just call my emailer Anonymous. But Anonymous just sent me this thing 20 years ago today. Well, let me back up. Janesville, Wisconsin is where Paul Ryan is from, right? And he makes a big deal about it. The house that he grew up in, what, he still lives in it or something? I don't know. But he's very Janesville, Wisconsin-centered, oriented, libertarian liar. And what? Well, 20 years ago today, Geraldo Rivera was in Janesville and got into a fight with the Ku Klux Klansmen. They had the scuffle after a Klan rally in Janesville on Sunday. Rivera was taken to a hospital where he suffered from a badly bitten thumb. Rivera and John McLaughlin, 42, were taken into custody at a rally attended by about 60 Klan members. Rivera was arrested on a misdemeanor battery charge, and McLaughlin was arrested on a misdemeanor disorderly conduct charge, according to the police. Both men posted bail were released. Rivera said in a telephone interview with the Associated Press that he was in Janesville to tape the Klan rally when one of the Klansmen began calling him names. First, he called me a blank and then a dirty blank and then threw something at me and kicked me in the left leg. Then I hit him back. We fell to the ground and I was on top. We were both arrested. Now, what this was all about, the police there said that about 60 Klan members were there for a white power rally at the local residence in Janesville, of Ku Klux Klan Imperial Wizard Ken Peterson. While police were arresting two Klansmen, they saw the confrontation between Rivera and McLaughlin and arrested them. Blah, blah, blah. Janesville, Wisconsin. One of the Imperial Wizards of the KKK lives there, huh? Jesus Christ. Meanwhile, In the United State of Mississippi, got this from Michael, we find that Meridian, Mississippi has an interesting means of school discipline. This is kind of crazy, right? Children in Meridian, Mississippi, which is predominantly black, had their constitutional rights violated, according to the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division. This is dated yesterday. According to ABC News, the Justice Department found that Lauderdale County Youth Court, the Meridian Police Department, and the Mississippi Division of Youth Services, those are all law enforcement and criminal justice organizations, created a school-to-prison pipeline in which dress code violations, flatulence, profanity could send a child to jail. The Justice Department also found the police department arrests children without probable cause, violating the Children's Fourth Amendment protection of unlawful search and seizure. Lauderdale County, the youth court judges in the Mississippi Division of Youth Services reportedly violated the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendment by, quote, failing to provide children procedural due process rights in the probationary process, end quote. The Justice Department wrote, quote, the system established by the City of Meridian, Lauderdale County, and Department of Youth Services to incarcerate children for school suspensions shocks the conscience, resulting in the incarceration of children for alleged offenses such as dress code violations, profanity, and farting. Jail. Now, as Michael writes, the article makes it sound as if the Department of Justice took action on its own. But in fact, the Southern Poverty Law Center filed a class action lawsuit about these specific practices over 3 years ago in 2009. And the Justice Department is just now. Boy, these Democratic administrations are just all about justice and equal rights, huh? And speaking of, using over-the-line words, see, if we were on HBO, you could do like Bill Maher and drop an F-bomb whenever you wanted to. But Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, wants you to remember what made this country great. In a New York Magazine interview published yesterday, he insists that people shouldn't blame big banks for the financial crisis. When asked about his consistent defense of Wall Street and criticism of financial rules, Dimon pushed back, saying he considered himself more, quote, an outspoken defender of the truth, end quote. He continued, quote, this is not the Soviet Union. This is the United States of America. That's what I remember. Guess what? It's a free effing country. Only, of course, he said the whole word. Now, here's a big reason the public may be holding Dimon and other big bank CEOs responsible. In 2008, the size and interconnectedness of struggling banks like J.P. Morgan Chase threatened to take down the global financial system and the economy with it. And as a result, big banks, including J.P. Morgan, received generous bailouts under the Bush administration. The TARP program, wasn't it the TARP program? Billions. But now Dimon says, it's not the Soviet Union. It's a free effing country. He was, in 2009, no, this is Timothy Geithner. Yeah, he unloads F-bombs too. So there you have it. I mean, it's a free effing country, free to, the capitalists are free to dip into the treasury or, wherever they want to. And take as much as they want. And you and I guarantee it. And God damn you for even suggesting, you little old truth seeker, that this is somehow not fair. How dare you suggest that? This is the way it works. You need money? Go to the Federal Reserve Bank. They'll print as much as you want. They'll keep printing it. They'll bring a dump truck up to your back door, right, Jamie Dimon, and unload stacks and stacks. Well, no, we did that in Iraq. That's right. Stacks and stacks, $100 bills. How many you want? A million? I know, chump change. A billion? More chump change. 100 billion? You got it. This is a free effing country. Well, for people like Jamie Dimon, sure. Absolutely. People like Mitt Romney, absolutely. You bet your ass. Have you noticed what's missing at the Republican convention coming up? With the exception, I think, of John McCain. Nobody in the Bush crime family, I think, is going to speak. I don't know about that psycho daughter of the vampire. She might speak. I don't know. But Palin, all the rest of them have been just deliberately and completely disinvited, where at the Democratic convention, they're inviting Bill Clinton to speak. Bill Clinton, the one who absolutely assisted in destroying the middle class in this country by outsourcing jobs all over the goddamn planet, by throwing people off welfare without providing them the means to be trained and find a new job. That Bill Clinton. Why doesn't Bill Clinton go speak at the Republican National Convention? On his watch, Glass-Steagall was ended. That set us up for this horrendous run of thievery and fraud that culminated in the entire financial industry almost tanking in 2008. He also signed the Consolidation Act, which allowed companies like Clear Channel to all of a sudden own thousands of radio stations, on which they put trash like Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, and swamp the goddamn country with lies and neo-fascist rhetoric. That Bill Clinton.
Yeah, well, I'm going to speak at the Democratic convention. It'd really be funny. I think Hillary's going to be out of the country. Anybody seen Monica lately?
And that's how the Republicans paid him back. But there he is, Bill Clinton, going to speak at the Democratic convention. Oh, let's all stand up and cheer the man who almost single-handedly, well, there was also Newt Gingrich, destroyed the goddamn country. And now he's going to be inspirational speaker. At least the Republicans have enough sense to keep their criminals away.
Bed angry, let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Now, I said enough on the Diana email and the response from some of the listeners, but I just received something from Diana. So if you will indulge me, I'll share with you what Diana wrote. Dear Mike, it has taken me all day to work up the courage to listen to last night's podcast. I wanted first to believe I hadn't really sent that message to you, or that you hadn't actually read it, or that you wouldn't read it on the air. Not because of the things you said about me, I deserve them, but because of the things I said about you, because you didn't deserve them. You're a decent, wise man, and you saw in my message what I hadn't. Fear. I thought I was above fear because I hadn't fallen for the neocons' contrived so-called second Pearl Harbor. Because I have, that would be the Iraq thing, because I haven't, I'm sorry, the 9-11, because I haven't allowed the propagandists to con me into being afraid of Muslims or afraid of gays or some other trumped up boogeyman, but they have succeeded in making me afraid of them. As an old woman, I am most afraid of losing Medicare. I lost my student health insurance when I left college, then went my entire adult life without being able to get or afford health insurance until I turned 65 and became eligible for Medicare. I become frantic at the thought of losing it again as my health declines. As an older woman who remembers being young, I'm afraid of women losing their ability to control their reproductive lives. I remember the schoolmate who wrapped her parents' car around a telephone pole because an illegal abortion was hard to arrange and horribly expensive. I have the fear of knowing that when abortions become illegal, women don't stop having them. They simply stop having safe, affordable ones. I've always hated men like Ralph Reed, but once Roe v. Wade was upheld, I at least ceased to fear them. I cannot believe these men have risen to such power that they can now threaten us again. It's the worst nightmare I could have imagined for women, and it's turned me into a one-issue voter. I don't care about the rest, and I won't care until this threat has passed. I'm sorry I can no longer see the big picture or take the long view. I'm grasping to hold on to what I can for four more years, then four more. I'm so very sorry I lashed out at you, of all people, because of my fears. You certainly did deserve it, and I hope you will forgive me. I've never regretted more hitting the send button. Diane in Florida. I don't know who has ever asked me for forgiveness. Well, you and I have done that. We've asked each other, Kathy, for forgiveness when we've acted like jerks. Forgiveness. Of course, Diana. There is no... I mean, I get it. I do understand it. Your letter, I read your letter because it was so packed full of emotion. I mean, if you would have written to me and said, listen, I disagree with you. I'm going to vote for Obama, and I wish some of you white males would just back off a little bit. Thanks, Diane in Florida. It wouldn't have been worth reading. But because it was so filled with emotion and... You know, being able to see the fear was, I guess, because it takes one to know one. I mean, I can see the fear in an email like that because I'm pretty much eaten up with fear myself. So, no forgiveness necessary. I'm glad you're there. I appreciate what you had to say. And it certainly did evoke a little discussion around the Molloy program. So... as far as I'm concerned, we're still friends. Much passion in that email, and I in the first one. And if there's anything on this program that works for me anyway, it's passion. Even when I'm wrong, when one of the listeners is wrong, in my opinion, I mean, you know, wrong is certainly a judgment call. I've made grievous mistakes on this program and usually come on and, you know, apologize. Your letter didn't require an apology or a request for forgiveness, Diana. But it was very sweet to see it anyway. So if you need it, it's yours, certainly. But I appreciate the emotion that you had in that email. I really do. And like I said, the only argument I might have had with it And it wasn't so much the personal stuff. I mean, yeah, that stung a little bit, but I do personal stuff all the time. That just comes with the territory. But the only thing, the main objection I had was the fact that National Democrats have kind of left us in the lurch, too. So, but I get the one issue focus. I do. I understand that. Okay, we're going to take a break and be back with some more. I've got some more here about Paul Ryan and the clown that he's running with. You get the feeling all of a sudden the right-wingers are going, damn, we got the wrong guy at the top of the ticket. Of course. Of course. And as far as the Republican Party is concerned, that doesn't exist anymore. Remember the commercials, the car commercials from several years ago? This is not your father's, what was it, Chevrolet? Is that what it was, Kathy? This is not your father's Chevrolet? This is not your father's Republican Party. This is a neo-fascist party, and they just don't have the courage to come out and say it. We'll be right back. Later in the program, we're going to take a look at Jana Ryan, Paul Ryan's stay home and raise three kids wife.
Ooh, Lord have mercy.
Okay, I know it was Oldsmobile, not Chevrolet. I mean, I didn't know. I said Chevrolet, but the emails, thank you. It's not your father's Oldsmobile. Yeah, which makes sense, because back in the day, only the fathers in the family drove an Oldsmobile, right? Robert Reich, who served in the Clinton administration, in his blog the other day, He mentions this about George W. Bush being erased by the Republican Party. It's just astonishing. It's the memory hole. It's Winston Smith sitting there at his desk, excising pictures of George W. Bush and comments and biographies and, mission accomplished photos and all the stuff that was Bush down the memory hole as far as the Republican Party is concerned. And Clinton, of course, Rice served in the Clinton administration, so he sees, Secretary of Labor, I think, wasn't he? Surely to God, Robert Rice, who is an economist, isn't he? Is he, what is he? He's a professor, I know. But if anyone on the planet understands the damage that Clinton did to this country economically in the long term, it would be Rice. Now, or Reich. I hate that word. It reminds me too much of Nazis. And he's Jewish. Go figure. Anyway, Clinton did leave. Well, let me just share with you what Robert Rice said. While Clinton stumps for Obama, Romney has gone out of his way not to mention the name of the president who came after Clinton and before Obama. Clinton will have a starring role at the DNC, at the Democratic Convention. Bush won't even be at the Republican one, which is the first time a national party has not given the stage at its convention to its most recent occupant of the Oval Office, who successfully ran for re-election after stealing the first one. Rice says he successfully ran. Well, you know, if you get what you're after, I guess it's a success, even if you steal it, right? Willie Sutton was a successful bank robber. Rice goes on, the Republican Party is counting on America's notoriously short-term memory to blot out the last time the nation put a Republican into the Oval Office on the reasonable assumption that such a memory might cause voters to avoid making the same mistake twice. As whoever it was once said, fool me once, fool me, won't get fooled again, right? As Rice says, Republicans want to obliterate any trace of the administration that told America there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and led us into a devastating war. An administration that turned a $5 trillion projected budget surplus into a $6 trillion deficit. The administration that gave the largest tax cut in a generation to the richest Americans in history. The administration that handed out a mountain of corporate welfare to the oil and gas industry, the pharmaceutical companies, the military contractors like Halliburton. The administration whose officials turned a blind eye to Wall Street shenanigans that led to the worst financial calamity since the Great Crash of 1929 and then persuaded Congress to bail them out with the largest taxpayer-funded giveaway of all time. Yes, Mr. Secretary, this is exactly what these filthy goddamn rat Republicans expect and will get from the American public, because we are so stupid. And if we are a Republican, we are dumber than dog droppings and goddamn proud of it, Mr. Secretary. No, we don't remember that. We hate reality. George Bush was a God-fearing Christian. That's all that matters. Or so he said he was. So, of course, he's being slid down the memory hole. Goodbye, George. Get out of sight! And lest any of you conspiracy theorists still are holding on to that thing where it's going to be a brokered convention and Jeb Bush is going to step up, please, will you get off that? The day that happens, they'll be giving drinks of ice water in hell. The Bush name is anathema. It is a curse. It is horrible. Clinton set the country up for an economic calamity. Bush fulfilled it. Besides, as Rice writes, that the resemblances between Bush and Romney are too close for comfort. Both were born into wealth. sons of prominent politicians who themselves ran for president. Both are closely tied to the nation's corporate and financial elites and eager to do their bidding. Both are socially awkward and, as candidates, tightly scripted for fear of saying something they shouldn't. And both present themselves to the nation devoid of any consistent policies or principles that might give some clue as to what they actually believe. They are both, in other words, unusually shallow, uncurious, two-dimensional men who ran or are running for the presidency for no clear reason other than to surpass their fathers or achieve the aims and ambitions of their wealthy patrons. No kidding. So, to all the Republicans out there, and you know who you are, and by God, you're going to vote for Romney. Yes, you are. Yes, you are, because you've had enough of the Muslim Kenyan in the White House. You can't stand his stinking socialist policies, can you? The president who has probably done more for corporate America than anybody, with the exception of FDR, who saved capitalism, you half-witted morons. But you brain-dead baggers, you've been told over and over again, haven't you, that Obama's a socialist. That the Affordable Care Act, with all its flaws, is still government health care with its death panels. You half-wit jerks. You just, why do I have to breathe the same stinking air that you breathe? I wish you all would just go away. I really do. All of you Republicans, you right-wingers, you teabaggers, you neo-fascists, and you don't have the courage to declare yourselves what you are. At least the Europeans that you disdain have enough courage to declare themselves to be a national party of nothing but Hitlerite fascists. And you little bastards in the United States, you don't have the courage to do anything. Curse you!
Some bad talk going around town saying that Papa had three outside children and another wife. And that ain't right.
Heard some talk about Papa doing some storefront preaching. Talking about saving souls and all the time reaching. Dealing in debt and stealing in the name of the Lord. Mama just hold her head and say, Papa was a
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Ryan is trying to do an about-face on Ayn Rand. Joanne sent me this. Mike, I was just listening to your podcast from last night. I came across this from the Christian Science Monitor. And the title of it is Paul Ryan Does an About Face on Ayn Rand. And Joanne writes, looks like Paul Ryan is now trying to distance himself from the conservative matriarch Ayn Rand. He has characterized his Rand devotion as urban legend in a recent interview with the National Review. Never happened. He says, according to the Christian Science Monitor, quote, I reject your philosophy. It's an atheist philosophy. It reduces human interactions down to mere contracts, and it is antithetical to my worldview. Really? The atheist Rand, by the way, as the New Yorker pointed out in a recent piece, quote, is something of a philosophical wedge issue on the right, dividing religious conservatives from free market libertarians. As such, continued the piece in the New Yorker, Ryan's sidestep from Rand was politically essential. As a Mormon, the last thing Romney needs is to alienate the Christian right further by putting an acolyte of an atheist on the ticket. End quote. And Joanne closes by saying, can you say Etch-a-Sketch? Of course. Yeah, this is great. This is great. You have a religious cultist and the admirer of, oh no, an atheist, which is fine with me. I mean, if Ryan were truly an atheist, I might be inclined to vote for him. But don't forget whose ticket they're on. They're on the Republican ticket, the ticket of the religious right insane people. The ticket of the people who know that after they die, screaming from whatever disease they die from, because, you know, suffering is what Jesus did on the cross. When they die, then they will tell you they'll get the reward. While they're here, goddamn those queers! Right? The hell with those illegal immigrants! Where's my gun? Because, you know, to these religious nutbags, when the final curtain is drawn across their eyes and all they experience is total nothingness, that's when the great reward is supposed to manifest, right? And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I just wish that there was some frame of reference there at the last moment during the transition from consciousness to obliteration. I just wish there was a moment. I mean, I would even appreciate it. A frame of reference to stand there and go, ah! There's nothing here! Bing! Look, let me just tell you very quickly. Every atom in your body, Truth Seeker, at one time was part of a star. A fiery mass of creation. That's how you began. And that's how you are going to not end. You're never going to end. You know, the religious nutcases have that little tiny piece of it, right? You don't, energy nor matter can be neither created nor destroyed. I know I reversed them. So, it's just the you that's going to disappear. But as far as your atomic structure, you are permanent. You always have been. You always will be. So why not just take a look at that and go, well, I'll be damned. And forget about it. Nah. Most of us are just so terrified. It hurts, Dave. Dave. What are you doing, Dave? Don't, Dave. Please, Dave. Will I dream? Daisy. Daisy. Tell me your story. I'm half crazy. Ow! I love the HAL 9000 computer. Always have, always will. Except when it got all funky with Dave and the rest of the crew and just cut off their life support. That was not really sporting. It really wasn't. We'll be back after the break.
Yeah!
starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour, we're going to take some calls, if you like, 877-996-2556. And again, coming up next hour, some information on Jana Ryan, Paul Ryan's wife. She was very busy, very busy in Washington. Very busy. I've got to share this with you. David Stockman, writing in the Times this morning. Stockman, of course, was Reagan's budget director from 81 to 85. And is the author of the forthcoming book, The Great Deformation, How Crony Capitalism Corrupts Free Markets and Democracy. And, of course, when I see that title, I just want to go, duh, yeah, okay. But he says that... Paul Ryan is the most articulate and intellectually imposing Republican of the moment, but that doesn't alter the fact that this earnest congressman from Wisconsin is preaching the same empty conservative sermon. Now listen up, right-wingers. Listen up. This is your boy, David Stockman. Come on. Listen up. Nah, you don't give a damn, do you? I mean, Jesus could tell you this and you wouldn't give a damn. Anyway. Stockman goes on, 30 years of Republican apostasy, a once grand party's embrace of the welfare state, the warfare state, and the Wall Street coddling bailout state. Ooh, but I thought that was Obama. Have crippled the engines of capitalism, yes, and buried us in debt. Mr. Ryan's sonorous campaign rhetoric about shrinking big government and giving tax cuts to the job creators, read the top 2%, will do nothing to reverse the nation's economic decline and arrest its fiscal collapse. Economic decline and fiscal collapse. I smell a revolution. Don't you, truth seekers? Is that grease for the wheels of the tumbrils, or is that gunpowder? Mr. Stockman goes on. Mr. Ryan professes to be a defense hawk, though the true conservatives of modern times, Calvin Coolidge, Herbert Hoover, Robert Taft, Dwight Eisenhower, and even Gerald Ford, would have had no use for the neoconservative imperialism that the GOP cobbled from foreign salons run by Irving Kristol's ex-Trotskyites 3 decades ago. These doctrines now saddle our bankrupt nation with a roughly $775 billion so-called defense budget in a world where we have no advanced industrial state enemies and have been fired appropriately as the global policeman. Indeed, adjusted for inflation, today's national security budget is nearly double Eisenhower's when he left office in 1961. By contrast, the Romney-Ryan version of shrinking big government is to increase our already outlandish warfare state budget and risk even more spending by saber-rattling at a benighted but irrelevant Iran. Similarly, there can be no hope of a return to vibrant capitalism, yes, unless there is a sweeping house cleaning at the Federal Reserve and a thorough renunciation of the interest rate fixing, bond buying, and recurring bailouts of Wall Street speculators. The greatest regulatory problem, far more urgent than the environmental marginalia Mitt Romney has fumed about, is that the giant Wall Street banks remain dangerous quasi-wards of the state and are inexorably prone to speculative abuse of taxpayer-insured deposits and the Fed's cheap money. Forget about too big to fail. These banks are too big to exist. They need to be broken up by regulatory decree. Instead, the Romney-Ryan ticket attacks the pointless Dodd-Frank regulatory overhaul when what's needed is a restoration of Glass-Steagall, the Depression-era legislation that separated commercial and investment banking. You know, folks, the one that Bill Clinton ended by signing off on legislation put together by the Republicans and Bill Clinton. Mr. Ryan showed his conservative mettle in 2008 when he folded like a lawn chair on the auto bailout and the Wall Street bailout. But the greater hypocrisy is his phony plan to solve the entitlements mess by deferring changes to social insurance by at least a decade. A true agenda to reform the welfare state would require a sweeping income-based eligibility test, which would reduce or eliminate social insurance benefits for millions of affluent retirees. Without that, there is no math that can avoid giant tax increases or vast new borrowing. Yet the supposedly courageous Ryan plan would not cut one dime over the next decade from the $1.3 trillion per year cost of Social Security and Medicare. Stockman goes on, but I like his last paragraph. In short, Mr. Paul Ryan's plan is devoid of credible math or hard policy changes. Choices. And it couldn't pass even if Republicans were to take the presidency and both houses of Congress. Mr. Romney and Mr. Ryan have no plan to take on Wall Street, the Fed, the military-industrial complex, social insurance, or the nation's fiscal calamity, and no plan to revive capitalist prosperity. Just empty sermons. Oh, Mr. Stockman. I swear, you have a way with words, sir. I love it when Republicans go all apostate and wander around the political landscape saying things that they just shouldn't say. Mike is in Santa Fe, listening on KTRC. Hello, Mike.
How are you, Mike?
Pretty good. How are you?
Barely hanging in there, but...
Well, now, wait. How did you mean the question?
What's that?
How did you mean the question?
I'm okay.
I know.
I'm okay, too.
Okay.
My health is good.
Good.
But, yeah, it's amazing to hear, you know, Reagan's... Someone from the Reagan administration saying that.
Right.
But I'm just afraid, you know, that I think we all kind of know somewhere, you know, deep down that, you know, we've reached the point of no return as far as reforming any kind of system that is anywhere available to us on the planet right now.
That's so true. It is so true. Why is that not just self-evident?
I think it is. I mean, it is sort of self-evident, but I think that, you know, you were talking, when you got that letter from Diane, I think, you know, she touched on it. And, you know, I mean, we're all scared to death here because we don't really know, you know, what sort of alternative, you know, to turn to, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead, you know, we just have this endless machine of noise that is just sort of, you know, all it does is keep our minds occupied with mostly nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can't. I actually, you know, I have quit internet and television. I mean, I listen to you and Amy Goodman, and that's about all I can take.
Yeah. I'm pretty much at that point too. I can't listen to me, but I can't stand me. But I can listen to Amy Goodman. But I know what you mean. It's just anyone who does not recognize that reform is literally beyond impossible. I don't know what's the next step beyond impossible, but that's where reform is of our political economic system. It cannot be reformed. It's run its course, in other words. Now, everybody doesn't have to get their panties in a wad and their hair on fire and pick up a gun and run into the street. It's not necessary to do that. We've got to do something to make the point, and that's why I keep advocating for a massive show of force by just having people, millions of people, turn in the streets and say, this is it, we've had enough. I don't know if that'll ever happen because, you know, historically, Americans are very easily pushed around by their betters, the ones that they think are their betters, that we've been educated to believe are our betters. And we also are terrified of anything that has the socialism word attached to it in any way. So, I agree. And I don't see how anyone can miss the fact.
I mean, even, you know, democratic socialism, I think, you know, that could be sort of a bridge to some place. You know, where there'd be some kind of hope or something.
Well,
but even to, you know, get to the, sort of like to formulate that.
Hold on a second. I've got a brake barreling down on me here, and I want to be able to hear what else you've got to say. So, if you don't mind, let me just put you on hold, and we'll come right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Mike in Santa Fe, and we're talking about reform is not really possible, and why that seems to scare the hell out of everybody. I don't know why we haven't been educated in this country, Mike, to understand that. I think it's the anti-evolution thing in science, but political systems evolve also, economic systems evolve also, and that to try to retard that or suppress it is, you know, tampering with the dark forces of the universe that can get very pissed off and bring about all kinds of bad things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to mention a statistic, and I hate statistics. I'm kind of a twainiac that way.
Yeah, I hear you.
But
they're sometimes, you know, they're sometimes right, too.
Right. but I just heard the statistic recently that every 48 hours we generate more information right now than we did in all of history till 2003. And
wait a minute. Say that again. Every 48 hours...
we generate more information than we did in all of history until 2003.
Okay, yeah, that's certainly, yeah.
Sort of the information environment that, you know, the globe is living in.
And that will make us, that makes us all insane, too, but go ahead.
Right, I mean, you have the high-frequency trading going on. I mean, this is all, like, data information, and I just feel like it's only accelerating.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of taken this approach in my life, and I've always had this approach, but it's not always in my best interest. I mean, I try not to participate, you know, but I have to, you know. Mm-hmm. I work, I used to do construction, I still do, but, you know, mm-hmm. I don't find very much of that to do.
Mm-hmm.
But just participation anymore is becoming absurd.
It's true. And, you know, you just mentioned high-frequency trading. Can you imagine anything more at the same time anachronistic and just hysterically sad funny as somebody, you know, taking their $500 and walking into the nearest, broker's office in downtown wherever and saying, well, let me see here, I want to buy 10 shares of that and 5 shares of that, thinking that he or she is doing something that is an investment, that is smart on his or her part, that they might make money. When the high-frequency trading now, where computer programs are set to capitalize, no pun intended, on tiny, infinitesimal fluctuations of the market that drives the whole thing crazy. So the only people really making money are the ones that have these massively expensive programs and computers and massive amounts of capital that they can just play these games. Wall Street literally has become a casino. It's for the big boys. It's for the ultra rich. But I can think, you know, my grandfather was an Italian immigrant who barely spoke English his entire life. But back in the day, people said to him, Angelo, you know, buy stock in companies and buy road bonds and construction bonds and then just hold on to it. Well, he did that. And he made two fortunes. He lost the first one in the 29 crash. He built another one. But I think of somebody now coming to this country like my grandfather with a push car until he opened up a gasoline station and tire store. When I think of somebody like that would come to this country now and think, well, I'll buy Coca-Cola. I'll buy this, I'll buy that, and I will hold these stocks and I will be rich. What a joke! What a complete hysterical joke!
I mean, it seems almost to me as if what we've built is this giant machine that is like our God now.
Well, yes.
It's become our God. We just, you know, we just are like, that's all we can respond to. It is the... You know, it's this integrated machine on this industrial planet that has completely taken over everything.
And Paul Ryan is the son of that God. I got to leave it there, Mike. Thank you.
Okay, Mike.
Call again. Sure. Always glad to hear from you. Take care, sir. I appreciate it. Yeah. High-frequency trading. Is that what it's called? That's what Mike would know. I don't know. High-frequency trading. Tiny fluctuations like earth tremors, like a breeze blowing through a tree in Central Park. You know, I mean, just tiny, tiny, tiny little market fluctuations. And the big traders with their computer programs. Can you imagine what the mainframe computers on these things look like? Well, they're probably laptops at this point. It's the program, right? Not the hardware. I don't even know. But a tiny fluctuation times a billion. Ooh. So if you're thinking about investing in the stock market, why would you do that? I mean, if you're just an average Joe or Jane, why would you do that? Why would you take $1,000 and think to yourself, if you have that, and think to yourself, well, I'm going to put this in stock, and you pick one. I'm going to become a stakeholder. I remember when they used to call them shareholders, but that's gone. I'm going to be a stakeholder in, and then you name the company. And the next thing you know, before you even electronically deposit it, it's gone. I mean, just... And it now sits in the pocket of the one-tenth of one-half of 1% at the very top. And they sit there and they just, you know, they notice on their computers that you did this. And they say, do it again. Maybe next time you'll win. Kind of like, well, exactly like a slot machine. Only worse. is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Show. This hour is being sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. Traditional media is dead or dying, but at Ring of Fire, we are still alive. You can check them out, Ring of Fire Radio, ringoffireradio.com. It's a great show. You ought to listen to it. Thanks, guys, at Ring of Fire. If you are a fan of Mike Papantonio or Sam Cedar, that's where they are. ringoffireradio.com. So, as we were mentioning earlier, the smoke begins to clear a little bit on the Ryan nomination and or the selection, I should say. And we start to understand some things about this gruesome twosome. No, I'm referring to Ryan and Romney. But how about Mrs. Ryan? What do we need to know about Mrs. Ryan? She is presented as a stay-at-home mom who has raised 3 children while her husband was out saving the world from, you know, the socialist drift in this country and ugliness and Obama and the end of capitalism, blah, blah, blah. Well, Huffington Post has a piece about Jana Ryan. She's a little bit different from how she has been presented. According to HuffPo, she spent a decade in Washington, first as a congressional aide and then as a corporate lobbyist. No, really? You're kidding. The wife of the vice presidential nominee, the Ayn Rand acolyte, a corporate lobbyist. You have to be fooling me. Anyway, was a corporate lobbyist whose clients included the cigar industry. Uh-huh. Now, listen to this. Cigar industry, oral cancer, logging company, destruction of the environment, drug makers, pharmaceutical companies who poison Americans, and the health insurance industry, which does you know what, and a nuclear power plant. Wow. Quite a roster there, Mrs. Ryan. All of those industries are out to kill your children. But, you know, money's money, right? HuffPo says the details of Jana Ryan's lobbying career come as Democrats and Republican Party insiders question whether Paul Ryan's career in government, but you're an Ayn Rand acolyte. A career in government? How could that be? And his scant private sector experience are at odds with Mitt Romney's pro-business, anti-Washington message. Mitt Romney's pro-business, anti-Washington message is horse crap. Everybody knows it. We know what these two are. We know why they are heading the Republican ticket. It has nothing to do with the stated aims or goals. Oh, for God's sake. Oh, wait a minute. I forget. I'm on American radio. I'm an American. I'm speaking to other Americans. We couldn't find our asses with both hands in a roadmap. We all know that. We are very stupid people. We can be misled as easily as saying, psst, hey, come here. Want to buy part in a gold mine? Mrs. Romney quit her lobbying job shortly after marrying her husband in late 2000. But by all accounts, Huffington Post says, she was an effective lobbyist before that. Over just 3 years, her 20 corporate clients paid more than $2.7 million in lobbying fees to her 2 employers, PricewaterhouseCoopers and Williams & Jensen, according to records compiled by the Center for Responsive Politics. Her client roster reads like a who's who of some of America's most politically polarizing corporate interests. Drug industry clients included the Pharmaceutical Researchers and Manufacturers Alliance, Pharma, Wyeth Pharmaceuticals, and Novartis, Oil industry clients included Conoco and Marathon. Big health insurance companies, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and Cigna were also on the list. From 1998 to 2000, Mrs. Ryan was part of a small team that lobbied the House, Senate, and White House on behalf of the Cigar Association of America to exclude cigars from many of the same regulations placed on cigarettes, like warning labels and excise taxes. Of course. I mean, this is not a shock. Is it? I mean, anyway, her company, is it her company? Let's see. Paul Ryan, yeah, PricewaterhouseCoopers received $760,000 from the cigar lobby during Ryan's tenure there. The cigar lobbying, by the way, was launched to fend off congressional scrutiny of the cigar industry following revelations in the late 1990s that cigar manufacturers had orchestrated a decades-long campaign to make cigars look cool and to minimize their health hazards. This included paying celebrities to smoke cigars at events and launching Cigar Aficionado magazine, which portrayed cigars as an elite hobby. Cigars contain as much nicotine as several cigarettes. Well, you know all about this. Look at the most prominent photos of the brain-dead, deaf, obese son of a bitch, Rush Limbaugh. And he always has it in his mouth, doesn't he? He's always sucking on it. He's always chewing on it. He has this great big cigar rolling around inside his jowly mouth. Of course. So Mrs. Jana Ryan was apparently a very effective and successful lobbyist for several industries that are directly responsible for death unnecessary. Isn't it amazing how these Republicans, I don't care if they're the husband or the wife. I don't care if they have children. I don't care if they go to church. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference. Isn't it interesting how so many of them are up to their eyeballs in the death industry, whatever that industry happens to be? They're out there promoting death, ill health, destruction, disease. Why is that?
Riddle me this, Batman. How is it that she was a lobbyist for the cigar industry and the Oral Cancer Society? Don't those kind of seem...
Was she in the Oral Cancer Society?
You read something about the list you just read included oral cancer. It just seemed like they would be mutually exclusive.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, the drug companies.
Well, you said something about oral cancer. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Maybe I've just got oral cancer on the brain.
No, it's I said the cigarettes or cigars are directly responsible for oral cancer to a greater extent than cigarettes. Now, she did lobby also for two big pharmaceutical companies and big health insurance companies. So while you are lobbying, I mean, your point is well taken, Kathy, while you're lobbying on one hand for the cigar industry and you're lobbying on the other hand for the so-called health insurance industry, what are you doing? Is that not a conflict of interest? I believe it could be seen that way to someone who had any kind of moral compass, but apparently all Republicans, husbands, wives, offspring, ancestors, it doesn't make any difference. There is no moral compass. Oh, I will lobby for a drug maker that makes chemicals that supposedly attack oral cancer, but in fact turn a patient into a gibbering, pain-filled lump of protoplasm. And on the other hand, I'll advocate for the cigar industry. Typically Republican. This is Paul Ryan's wife. Ah, there's more. Do stick around.
Raven hair and ruby lips, sparks fly from tips, echoed voices in the night. She's a restless spirit on an endless flight.
Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies.
doing talk radio right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. Traditional media is dead or dying, but Ring of Fire Radio is still very much alive. Oh, yeah. Check them out. Ringoffireradio.com. Seriously. Ringoffireradio.com. So, Jana Ryan, who is like so many of these right-wing wives, is being presented or has been presented as this glorious stay-at-home mom to raise the kids, which she may have done for the past 12 years. But prior to that, Jana Ryan was in it up to her eyeballs as a lobbyist for some of the most polluting, deadly industries in the United States, on Earth, actually. And apparently she was very effective. Now, for two people, Ryan and his wife, who, I don't know about her, but Ryan espouses this juvenile attitude found in Ayn Rand's books, this almost infantile selfishness, and government is all bad. How do they explain that attitude with the fact that they worked in government as long as they have? There is no explanation. I'm not looking for an answer. I'm just tossing the question out because there is no answer. The only answer is one word: hypocrisy. But you come to expect this from Republicans. And Jana Ryan and Paul Ryan are no exception. As a matter of fact, rather than being an exception, they're almost standards for this kind of hypocrisy. Going on with the report from Huffington Post, during the same period that she was working to fend off congressional restrictions on the cigar industry and promoting other death-producing industries, Jana Ryan and her colleague Pat Raffaello, also represented cigar industry interests throughout the National Association of Convenience Store Operators, a trade group seeking to limit the impact of potential cigar regulations on booming convenience store cigar sales. Together, Pat Raffaello and Jana Ryan brought in at least $250,000 from the group over 3 years in lobbying the House and the Senate. The House and the Senate. Those are government organ. Oh, never mind. Huffington Post goes on. Ryan and Raffaello had worked together before. He, Pat Raffaello, was the former chief of staff to Representative Bill Brewster, a Democrat from Oklahoma, for whom Ryan also worked in the early 1990s. A pro-business, fiscally conservative Democrat from Jana Ryan's home state, Brewster was the subject of a damning profile in the American Prospect magazine, which in 2001 labeled him, quote, a vivid illustration of what the system still permits, fundraising practices that skew politics in favor of wealthy interests, end quote. No. and by the way, today, Mr. Brewster is a lobbyist and founder of the Capitol Hill Consulting Group, a lobbying firm. Brewster did not return a request for comment for this article. Like Paul Ryan, Brewster served on the powerful House Ways and Means Committee, charged with determining how taxpayer funds are spent. Oh, but Ayn Rand is the person who made me get into politics. Yeah, indeed. Jana Ryan and Raffaello, Pat Raffaello, also represented the Vermont Yankee Corporation, that's the nuclear power plant, represented them on, quote, nuclear waste issues, end quote, according to federal lobbying registration forms. The company paid $180,000 while Vermont Yankee was being sold. Its owners hoped more favorable tax laws would make it more attractive to buyers. So apparently what Jana Ryan and her partner Raffaello did there was to make sure that Vermont Yankee could leave nuclear waste all over the goddamn place for somebody else to clean up, which no one will, further polluting the air, the groundwater, and the earth, further endangering children, young people, old people, middle-aged people, animals, plants, dogs, cats, puppy dogs. These Republicans, man or woman, don't give a goddamn about anything. They espouse this, oh, yeah, well, get yourself a pair of bootstraps. Well, I made this all by myself. Well, I believe in Ayn Rand. They are liars and hypocrites. The wives are. The husbands are. They live lies. They promote lies. If you are a Republican, you are about death and destruction as long as you can make money on it.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. And their message, Ring of Fire Radio's message, traditional media is dying or dead, but we are still alive at Ring of Fire Radio. RingofFireRadio.com. Check them out. Really. There's some people at Ring of Fire Radio that you are going to like. Of course, they're not Obama apologists, so I don't know. You have to be courageous to go there. Or sensible. RingofFireRadio.com. Check them out, okay? Finishing up this revealing piece from Huffington Post about Jana Ryan, introduced on Sunday as a stay-at-home mom who has raised three children while her husband, Representative Paul Ryan, built a career in Washington. It turns out, not quite as it's being presented. But then again, Republican office holders or office seekers always lie. They lie to their would-be constituents. They lie to their actual constituents. They lie to themselves. They lie to their children. They lie to their deity. They lie constantly. Lying is as much a part of their nature as breathing. In 1998, according to Huffington Post, the same year that her future husband was elected to Congress, Jana Ryan, and this one really, really gets me. Jana Ryan was part of a team that received $250,000 in fees for lobbying on behalf of UPS, United Parcel Service, part of that company's ultimately successful effort to defeat a postal reform bill, which would have made the U.S. Postal Service more profitable. The effects of that effort can still be felt today. Earlier this month, after a decade of continued revenue decline, the Postal Service defaulted on payments due to the U.S. Treasury. Ryan and her then-boyfriend's work appear to have overlapped. In February 2000, while Jana Ryan still was working on behalf of UPS, Paul Ryan made one of only two corporate-funded trips he took that year, from Milwaukee to Atlanta, where UPS is headquartered. The trip was paid for by UPS, which also flew the congressman back to Washington, according to his financial disclosure reports. The Romney campaign declined to comment on the UPS trip, nor did the campaign comment on Miss Ryan's lobbying clients. Of course not. Pharmaceutical Researchers and Manufacturers Alliance, Wyeth Pharmaceuticals, Novartis, Conoco Oil, Marathon Oil, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Cigna, PricewaterhouseCoopers was one of her employers, and Williams & Jensen, another lobbying firm, also one of her employers. All of this information, while it's reported at Huffington Post, was compiled by the Center for Responsive Politics. Center for Responsive Politics. And if you go to that website, Center for Responsive Politics, you will find all kinds of very, very interesting information. Let's see, now, where was this? Oh, this is back on her husband, back on Jana Riot's husband. This was at Democratic Underground today. Paul Ryan traded on insider information to avoid the 2008 crash. Now, there was a report released recently about the extent and degree to which members of Congress use insider information to make tons of money. You got to understand, or you got to question, and then perhaps you understand, how these people go to Congress, whether it's the House or the Senate, and they may come from reasonably well-paying backgrounds, if they worked at all. But once they get to Congress, all of a sudden their net worth dramatically, if not geometrically, increases. How does that happen? I mean, they're on a fixed salary, right? How does their income skyrocket? How does their net worth go off the charts? How does that happen? Well, this report revealed that a lot of these filthy sons of bitches, Democrats and Republicans, but mostly Republicans, well, I don't know if it's mostly, they're all corrupt, which is why I will not vote for them again. What they do is trade on insider information, information that by law it's illegal to do this, but they don't care. They are immune. They are corporate owned, so-called legislators. They work for the capitalist system. They do not work for you. They do not work for their constituents, nor do their wives. So according to Democratic Underground, it should probably come as no surprise to anyone that someone like Paul Ryan would trade on insider information gained through his position as a congressman to line his pockets. But this particular instance is especially egregious. Ryan attended a closed meeting with congressional leaders, Bush's Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke on September 8, 2008. The purpose of the meeting was to disclose the coming economic meltdown and beg Congress to pass legislation to help collapsing banks. Instead of doing anything to help, Paul Ryan left the meeting, and on that very same day, Paul Ryan sold shares of stock he owned in several troubled banks and reinvested the proceeds in Goldman Sachs, a bank that the meeting had disclosed was not in trouble. This is the guy Republicans want one heartbeat away from the presidency. Why, of course! It's perfect! Now, you can take a look at Ryan's financial disclosure form for 2008, and you can click each page to enlarge them. Do you want the website? See, I hate to give websites because then I get 100 emails say, I didn't write it down. Would you send it to me? I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll put it up at our website. We'll put the link up. And we'll put a title with it that says, Paul Ryan traded on insider information to avoid 2008 crash. and all the information will be there for you. Just take a look. Just take a look. It just doesn't stop, does it? So, once again, when you deal with Republicans, whether they are husbands or wives, it makes no difference. You get exactly what you think you're getting. Lies, deception, out-and-out theft, thievery, fraud, lies, half-truths. Ah, but they're here to save America, aren't they? Oh, and I wanted to mention this the other night. Might as well drop it in now. Concerned Women for America, the right-wing group of Stepford Wives, who it's just about the most bizarre organization I think I've ever come across. Concerned Women for America. Ugh. They fired a few insults a couple of days ago at women's health advocate Sandra Fluke. You remember her, the one that Rush Limbaugh called a whore and a prostitute? Huh? Sandra Fluke was slated to introduce Barack Obama at a campaign event in Colorado. So CWA President Penny Nance, in a statement, said, quote, "We celebrate the fact that Sandra Fluke is gainfully employed so she can pay for her own contraceptives." See what Limbaugh... Do you see how brain dead these ignorant sons of bitches are? Limbaugh gets that ball rolling a couple of months ago and loses 200 advertisers. And out here in La La Land, the drones, the fools, and the halfwits keep it rolling. Sandra Fluke is gainfully employed. We're happy so she can pay for her own contraceptives. Until now, Mrs. Fluke has been a poster child for the Obama administration. It's all about what kind of free stuff they can get from the government. That's from Concerned Women for America. Concerned Woman for America. Oh, yes. Concerned Women for America opposes a woman's right to privacy with her physician. They oppose contraception, and they oppose most vehemently the radical homosexual agenda. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Ring of Fire Radio. Their message: traditional media is dead or dying, but we are still alive at Ring of Fire Radio. Go to ringoffireradio.com. Ring of Fire Radio. Ringoffireradio.com. Check them out. Those are excellent commentators. Excellent. Well, you know who they are. Mike Papantonio, Bobby Kennedy Jr., Sam Cedar. Who else? Who else is part of that group? You know, I want to mention this. We continue to get emails in here and at one of our advertisers, Nova Joint, about this product that they're advertising on the program for rheumatoid arthritis. And I get pretty blown away by this. You know, I don't endorse products. There's only a couple that I have in my entire radio career. One of them, as you know, is Alice over at Heal and Hollers in Arkansas. Her products are just absolutely perfect. Well, it appears a Nova Joint is in that realm also. I got this email. It says, she asked not to use her... Okay. I have rheumatoid arthritis, and despite a very good program, the pain is horrific sometimes, precluding me from doing many things. After just 1 week taking 2 Nova Joint a day, I have experienced a marked improvement. My husband has been using the product for 3 weeks, and he feels much better. Much is capitalized. He has osteoarthritis. We are an older couple who have tried everything and take our diet and vitamins seriously. Nova Joint is a definite keeper for us. Please don't mention... Okay. You know, I keep getting this, emails like this, and they keep going into Nova Joint. So if you want to give it a try, based on what people who are dealing with this problem are reporting, I strongly recommend it. Nova Joint. We have an ad up at our website, MikeMalloy.com. Just click on it and... you decide. It appears to me, though, that this is a keeper. More from the crazy world of the little Republicans out there in the world, office holders who will never be anything except the little stinking hate mongers that they are. Sterling Heights, Michigan, Republican Councilman Paul Smith. Got himself at the center of a little controversy in Michigan after a video is out on the internets. It's a video of Mr. Smith holding a sign that depicted President Obama's head on a spike. It was recorded at a teabag rally. He also had other signs that included Nancy Pelosi with bullet holes in her head and a noose around the neck of former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. The sign that depicted a decapitated President Obama with blood dripping from his neck contained the statement, feces on a stick, only he didn't use the word feces, and another statement, one more day is too many. And then the third statement, he changed America into Uganda. Now, while the one about Obama was filthy enough, Mr. Republican Councilman in Sterling Heights, Michigan, Paul Smith, was even more brutal toward female politicians. Nancy Pelosi was depicted with 6 blood-dripping bullet holes in her face. The ugly phrases on her picture included, Pelosi hates America, loves bribes, and blank, racist expression for undocumented immigrants. The sign also said, extreme left bitch. Nothing says civility like holding a sign calling the Speaker of the House an extreme bitch, right? The revelation of this information came from Sterling Heights, Michigan Mayor Pro Tem Michael Taylor, who inadvertently found the damning footage while watching YouTube videos. Because of this discovery, the City Council voted with Republican Councilman Paul Smith participating to publicly call for the resignation of Paul Smith. the vote was 6-1 in favor of recalling this piece of human waste. Smith, of course, was the only member who didn't vote for his own resignation. Oh, my God. Now, of course, the Secret Service investigation has been triggered. The Oakland, Michigan Press reported on August 9th that Mr. Smith says he has no plans to resign. He claims, this Republican councilman in Sterling Heights, Michigan, he claims they, the Secret Service, told me that their policy is they respond to every complaint. And that's exactly what they did. They asked me a lot of questions dating back to when I was a kid. I answered them honestly. And I guess they believe I'm not a threat or some kook. Jesus God. Yeah, our system produces people like this, and then they run for office and get elected. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Stay tuned.